them. They work.
Arr, matey.
Well, you're at work. Scott Zolak.
I think it's a disaster.
Mark Bertrand.
I know. I want to get it out.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Zolak, Bertrand, and now for the first time this football season, Burke Breer is with us. Burke, good to see you, bud.
Another year, we're talking about Kaepernick again. That means football season's here. You're hot on that, huh?
Not really.
I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. Like, that's what it is. Like and look, these guys all talk to each other. You know, like I know that the coaches on that 2015 Niners staff had questions about how much. He wanted to play 2016 Niners staff had questions about how much he wanted to play football anymore and whether or not he was really interested in being a football player long term. You mentioned like that tape, you know, they leaked the tape out of him working out. I had and Zoe, I'd love for you to look at it because I had a quarterback's coach text me after that tape came out and said, like, his mechanics are a mess. Yeah. Like, they watched it and they were like, it doesn't look like he's done any work at all. And so I think a bigger
question. It's like, remember the Tebow thing when they said they transformed Tebow and his throwing motion was different? There was never anything different.
It's just, I mean, it's like. Like this whole thing, like it, like there's a reason why he's not on the team to begin with was because it's you have to be worth the trouble. Like and I hate saying that. I hate putting it that way. But like it's just with any extra stuff that you bring to the
anything
table.
Anything that's not football to coaches is annoying and it goes
any
right up.
Non-football
you know
stuff you
right.
have to be worth
the
it.
Good coaches.
And so the more of it you bring, the better you have to be. Right. And so it goes up the roster and there are probably five guys on every team that are exempt from that. Right. That are good enough where a team will put up with almost anything to keep them. And Caps clearly wasn't in that class anymore. And so I think that's a big reason why he didn't have a job in the first place. And then last summer, and you mentioned the Ravens owner, like when you do that, like what's every other team thinking? If I bring him in here, is something like that going to happen? Is that going to happen on social media?
Well, it's not only that, too. And teams are so nowadays, you know, where they investigate everything and look at your background. Look who you hang out with. Look at the crowd that you run with. And look at who he is. Is he engaged or is he married? He's still engaged to her, right?
Are they engaged?
She's a big girl.
I thought
they were engaged to them. Not that that's whatever they are.
All of this sort of goes to the bigger point for me, which is this story has just been twisted and changed in ways that fit whatever narrative you want to support.
Right.
Whether you're for them or against them.
Yeah.
The facts are continuing to change based on whatever it is you believe in.
You think Nike cares about social injustice?
It's annoying.
I mean, if you're on one side of it, it's like then you call it anthem protest and you forget that he's not protesting the anthem, he's protesting social injustice. If you're on the other side of it, then you're compiling these lists of backup quarterbacks as if every one of those backup quarterbacks is in the same situation Colin Kaepernick is. No one's looking at this objectively.
No, it's either he's not in the league because of his protest or he's not in the league because he sucks. Well, it's actually both. It's actually a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Like most things, the truth is in between those two things.
And when your play declines, you better not have anything else attached to it.
Let's not exempt the league from this either because, like, to me, you know what, I look at it and I was talking to a player about this the other day, and you know he said, you know, they very easily could have done here what they did with Michael Sam, and they basically engineered Michael Sam getting drafted to the Rams, because they knew if he wasn't drafted, that hell would be risen over it. You know, like that people would say that the NFL is looking at this guy and they're trying to blackball him, and all these teams are looking at him a different way. What they did was they engineered him being drafted. Right? They said to Jeff Fisher, look, like, I don't know exactly what they gave him, but there were rumors they promised they wouldn't put him on Hard Knocks the next year. And just said, look, just do us a solid here. And Jeff Fisher was on the competition committee and everything else. They took him in the seventh round, and the thing took care of itself naturally. Like, he wasn't good enough, and then he was out of the league. And so the point the player was making to me was the league could have probably handled this that way. Like, just find a way to get him on a roster and let it take care of itself naturally.
How about the league statement that they put out yesterday? By the way, they have
before he sued them, because when he sues them, then we're talking about something else completely.
No. The NFL put out this statement saying, National Football League believes in dialogue, understanding, and unity. We embrace the role and responsibility of everyone involved with this game to promote meaningful, positive change in our communities. The social justice issues that Colin and other professional athletes have raised deserve our attention and action. Where's this coming from?
I think that they're frustrated because they've tried. Like, I think that they're frustrated because it's always come back to this. And, like, it came back to this last year in that meeting in October when you had, I think it was eight or nine players. It was the meeting where Bob McNair said the inmates are running the
asylum.
Prison.
Prison.
If he said asylum, I think he probably would have been okay.
No, you're right. The inmates are running the prison.
Right.
Correct.
Right. So in that meeting, my understanding was everything went well for 4 hours. Like, they talked about things. They went through things. They were like, okay, like, this is what we're going to do. And I think everybody felt good about it. Last 10 minutes of it, Eric Reed brought up, well, what about Kaepernick? And honestly, it just it changed the temperature in the room. You know, like, everything changed when he did that. And for some players, it's always going to come back to that. And I think that there's a point of frustration here for the league where it's like, almost no matter what they do, it's going to come back to this. And I mean, at this point, like, he's suing them. You know what I mean? Like, he's suing them. What are they supposed to do? So I can understand the frustration on their part here. What they're trying to point out is, we're trying to address it. We're trying to address what Colin's talking about. He's suing us now. What are we supposed to do?
Now it's on. Yeah.
Troy is in Dorchester. Troy, go ahead.
How you guys doing?
What's up, Troy? So,
maybe I'm a little bit confused, but he wasn't a starting quarterback when he started his protest, right?
Nope.
No, he's not.
Okay. So here goes my thing. For the people who are on so on one side or another that they see me in the gas station, and if you couldn't tell by my charming voice, I'm a black guy.
No.
So
I'm kidding with you, man.
I know. So I'm in a gas station. The guy here is 98.5 blasting, obviously. And he says to me, I bet you're going to get a bunch of Nikes now, huh? I bet you like the Nike move. And I'm like, dude, I just ignored him. Like, get over yourself, guy. You know what I mean? Like, who are you? Random dude in the gas station.
Somebody said that to you?
Yeah, guy. And I'm just like, all right, whatever. Like, pumping my gas. But, I mean, like, for the random people like that, get over yourself. Move on. This has nothing to do with a guy in a gas station pumping gas. You know, this is about something so much bigger, and people are making it something so stupid as him throwing a football, starting quarterback. He wasn't a starting quarterback anyway when he started his protest. This is ridiculous, you know?
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's part of the point. I mean, when you really have the platform, when you're the starter and you're stepping to the podium every Wednesday for your mandatory press conference, there's your platform.
People hate this comparison, but it's not that different from Tebow. Like, no. Tebow arrived in the scene. Denver was doing all this different stuff. They caught people off guard for a while. Denver got hot.
They figured out the book on you, man.
And then after a while, the tape's there. People have looked at what they're doing. And now all of a sudden, he's got to learn how to counterpunch as a player.
Do you remember who the starter was ahead of him?
Who?
Kyle Orton. Oh, no. Blaine Gabbert in San Francisco.
Blaine Gabbert.
Oh. Yeah. So, like,
he got beat up by Blaine Gabbert. He ended up starting that season, but that was who got the job out of the gate in 2016.
Pete brought him in, too.
Blaine Gabbert.
Didn't he bring him in for a workout?
Gabbert stinks.
They never signed him yet.
I don't know if they worked him out, but they did. They did bring him in. The Tebow thing, though, like, look, it's the same thing. Like, Tebow didn't do anything wrong, right? Like, he didn't, but it was trouble to bring him in. You were going to invite a circus if you brought him in. And it was worth it when he was a starting quarterback. When he's a backup, teams were looking at him and saying, you know what? I don't want 10 live trucks here the day we sign the guy. Forget it. We'll just go get this guy who no one's heard of.
Bill Belichick is going to speak at 11:30. You will hear that live on Zolak and Bertrand. Coming up next, I'll tell you how you can win tickets to the Patriots home opener on Sunday.
If you think Zolak is hard to contain on air,
balls everywhere,
you should work in the same building with him.
Did Zol leave?
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Welcome back to Zolak and Bertrand from Gillette Stadium on this Wednesday. Week one of the NFL season is upon us. We're going to talk to Stephon Gilmore maybe in the next couple of minutes.
Right.
He's in a meeting. As soon as his meeting wraps up, he's going to try and give us a give us a shout. Bill Belichick will speak at 11:30. That's just 10 minutes from now. So get a lot of balls in the air. Balls everywhere. Balls everywhere. Balls everywhere. So we'll sort this all out. But Gilmore could be calling us any minute. And we'll talk to him about this week one matchup. Also, coming up tomorrow at 11:30 and 1:30, two opportunities on tomorrow's show to win tickets to the home opener on Sunday. An extremely hot ticket for the opener.
Is Paulie in a truck allowed to call in for this?
Absolutely.
Oh, boy.
The weather, from what I can tell, is going to be like high 60s, low 70s.
And this is like one of the best opponents on the schedule for my money. Like the home schedule, you look at it. Like,
I think it's one of your top three homes.
Get Deshaun Watson. You get J.J. Watt. I mean, it's
right out of the gate.
Might be a little cloudy on Sunday, but it looks like it's going to be dry.
Be hammered by
noon. Comfortable.
Not me, but I mean,
dry
tailgating.
And the tailgates will be starting early.
We finally feel like fall, right?
Finally.
Finally feel like
but
fall.
Then I
tomorrow it won't. It's going to be 96.
I think it's going to be warm again next week.
Yeah.
So it may not last long, but we've got your tickets. Two pairs tomorrow. 11:30 and 1:30. Be listening to Zolak and Bertrand for your chance to win your way to the Patriots home opener. Let's welcome in from the New England Patriots. Guy will be out on the field on Sunday. Patriots cornerback Stephon Gilmore. He is brought to us by Geico. Stephon, how are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Hey, Stephon, you've been around the league a long time now. How hard is it to prepare for week one and the element of the unknown?
It's definitely hard, but, you know, it goes back to playing great technique and trusting your teammates and everybody doing that job. Everybody on our team playing a physical football game, so that's what it comes down to.
Does it make it more difficult that there's just not a ton of tape on Deshaun Watson? Obviously, played against him last year, but I would assume that sort of adds to the element of the unknown and that he's a unique talent, and there may not be any real telling how the Texans are going to use him.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows he's very elusive in the pocket. He can make great throws. And, you know, he's dangerous with the ball in his hand. So we got to be prepared, and everybody has to do their job, and we'll go from there.
Talk to us about Jadeveon Clowney, friend of yours. Grew up together.
How about that?
Went to the same high school, went to the same college, and now you're going to...
They don't have high schools like that.
How do you lose football? How do you lose games?
Yeah, how did you ever lose a game with the both of you on the team? And by the way, he's 2 years younger than you, right? So
you were
playing on the same team because he was so good or he was so big?
He's always been big ever since I've seen him in small five, Pee Wee League. He's always the biggest guy out there, and... you know, he's a great player. He always been freak athlete and very, you know, a great football player. So he's my friend, but on Sundays he'd be my enemy. But
did you guys kill anybody? Like everyone made it out alive, right?
Yeah, we didn't lose a football game, so that tells you a lot. Hey,
I was watching up top, you know, being down there in the Giants game, and Odell Beckham Jr. signed that big contract, and I saw you guys embrace him midfield. You talked to him for a while. What were you guys talking about last week?
I mean, I've been on him since he's been in the league, actually. And, you know, just. You know, congratulate him, and he's a great player. So, you know, we have relationships across the league. So, I'm happy for him.
What's this like for you? Like, because I think at least from our eyes, you struggled a little bit early last year, getting used to your new surroundings, new defense, all of that. How much more comfortable do you feel right now than you felt in Week One last year?
Yeah, I'm definitely more comfortable this year than I was last year coming in. So. At the end of the day, it starts off every year. You got to go out and prove yourself every year and you know, trust your teammates and everybody be on the same page. And, you know, play aggressive and play with great technique.
Okay, and I know you play with Chris Hogan. You play with Chris Hogan here, and there's been a lot of criticism about the lack of depth at the receiver position. You know, you didn't have joint practices this year. Tell us about Philip Dorsett. Do you see him grow from last year to this year and, you know, covering him every day in practice? What are some of the good things that he does that we can look forward to on Sunday?
He's got better in his route running. You know, he's got a great speed. Everybody know that. So, he's got better. There's one guy that I can say I've got better from going out covering him last year to this year. So, I'm looking forward to it. Him doing good.
How good is DeAndre Hopkins?
He's a great receiver, one of the top in the league. So, you know, he's making plays since he got in the league. He had great ball control and great hands. So it's going to be a good matchup between us and him.
You know, some of the tape, too, but my last one for you is you watch them on tape. And sometimes a quarterback will read something, and normally the read doesn't take you there. Say it's, you know, cover two. And normally you don't want to throw the ball deep into cover two, but you'll see Deshaun Watson do it with this guy. When you guys think you have the perfect coverage, do you have the ability to fall asleep a little bit, or do you got to play the play through because this guy will put it up even if he's covered?
Yeah, there's no falling asleep with, you know, these guys. You know, Deshaun Watson can make all the throws to Fuller, to Hopkins, to Bruce Ellington, so. Nobody's falling asleep. We got to expect the ball to come to one of us every play, and I think we take that mindset. We'll be okay.
Stephon Gilmore, Patriots Corner. Stephon, thank you. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
All right. Stephon Gilmore joining us here on Zolak and Bertrand. He is brought to us by Geico.
It's Rock Hill, South Carolina, right? He's from that high school. Okay.
I think it's South Point. Is that the name of it?
I think really Rock Hill is the name of the town, right? Because there's like a zillion NFL guys from there.
What's the name of the high school, though?
Kill Everyone.
Kill Everyone. Kill Everyone Regional?
Kill Everyone Regional. It's South Point High School. That's where they both went. Gilmore and Jadeveon Clowney. They played together all the way, basically their entire lives prior to coming
Pee-wee.
To the NFL.
You may have seen Clowney and Pee-wee.
Bill right, Belichick is coming up next. You will hear from the Patriots head coach live from Foxborough. Here's Hardy with headlines.
Sports Hub headlines.
As Beatles just said, Bill Belichick will be meeting the media in Foxborough ahead of the team's regular season opener on Sunday against Houston. We'll bring it to you right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Red Sox going for the sweep against the Braves in Atlanta starting at 12:10 today. Hector Velasquez will be your starting pitcher. He's also batting ninth in the National League Park. Red Sox beat the Braves 5-1 last night. Rick Porcello with his 16th win of the season. And the Revolution will take on New York City FC tonight at Yankee Stadium, looking to snap their 9-match winless streak. Headlines are brought to you by the Boston Area Campus of Connecticut School of Broadcasting. Get in the game. Visit GoCSB.com for more details. I'm Hardy on Boston's Home for Sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub. More headlines in 30 minutes.
Because you're at work doesn't mean you have to miss a story. Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Bill Belichick scheduled to speak right now. As soon as he steps to the podium, we'll bring it to you live right here on Zolak and Bertrand. Bert Breer of the MMQB is with us. 617-779-0985. You want to jump on board? We got open lines, but I do know that as soon as Bill steps up, we're going to go to Bill. Think he's in a good mood today? It's week one.
I'd say yes.
Football's back.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you see him this morning?
I did.
Did a little TV with Bill.
TV.
What was his general mood? Was a good one?
Week one's concern, man. That's just that open-ended thing. That's the ability to adjust in game.
I think especially with Watson, you're chasing ghosts.
Yeah,
because
right?
you don't know what they're going to throw at you.
Ideally, he wants to be a thrower, but you just can't. And that's the thing, you know, with a guy like Gilmore. Like, ideally, he's a man cover guy. So you're going to take him, you're going to put him on Hopkins. And that's what I'd do. Take him, put him on Hopkins. But when you're in full-blown man coverage, third
ball.
Four becomes a problem, man, because you're going downfield, and that dude, he said, here's your problem. It's not like Cam Newton where he's going to be like a strong runner. He said he could pop it like 40 like that,
right?
And boom, just be gone.
Yeah,
and it's just the fluidity of it, just smooth, and he's a tough guy to tackle.
Yeah,
and it's not like it's a Tebow-type tackling where you tackle him high and he's going to run through you. Yeah. No, it's just he could dodge people.
I mean, it's hard to get that image. One of the last images from last season, maybe in his last game, was that Seattle game where it just turned into an absolute shootout. And that was almost like
469 he hit that
like,
day.
That felt like the last stand of the Seattle defense. Go
Let's
ahead,
go to Bill Belichick, who's speaking right now.
We have quite a bit of time here to work on the Texans, and obviously right in the middle of our preparation week. So got a couple of big days coming up here. Impressive team, as they always are. Very well coached. Billy and Romeo, now Brad down there in the kicking game. They have a lot of outstanding players in all three phases of the game, so they present a lot of problems from a personnel standpoint. They present a lot of problems from a scheme standpoint, and they're a well-balanced team. They're explosive in all three phases of the game. They've consistently been one of the top defenses in the league in every category pretty much when they're healthy. And, you know, offensively, when they had things rolling last year with Watson, averaging 40 points a game, we obviously saw the explosiveness in our game last year. So we have a lot to get ready for. Opening day is always a challenge because the amount, the volume of all three phases and all the situations and all the things that have come up between last year, this year, and new personnel and so forth. Texans have quite a few new players. Everybody has new players on their roster. They have quite a few. About a third of their teams had been turned over. So got a lot of new people there to prepare for, get ready for. And of course, some of their best and most important players are look like they're ready to go. So that's where we're at this week. Like I said, we still have quite a bit of work to do. We're well underway. So we'll work through it here this week. And, you know, hopefully clean things up by the end of the week. You're ready to go.
Well, they have a couple of defenders that are new to their team, and Matthew and Colton. They seem like kind of middle of the field kind of guys. How difficult is it to try to forecast how they'll impact a new defense, being that they haven't played other than preseason in this scheme?
Yeah, well, those are all the opening day questions. I mean, we could go through 20 of those, and that's two of them, and you know, we can just keep piling them on. So we'll see. They know. We don't know. I'm sure they're asking some of the same questions about players on our team, and that's opening day. So,
is six games of Deshaun Watson enough to have a big enough sample size, have a good grasp of what their offense is going to be, or do you have to kind of be ready for maybe some things you haven't seen from them?
Well, I mean, Billy's a very good offensive coach, so it wouldn't make any difference what we had. Billy's always going to create problems for the defense based on the scheme and utilization of personnel and attacking your weaknesses, whatever they are. So there's always going to be an element of that. Again, we'll prepare for what we prepare for, and I'm sure we'll see things that we haven't prepared for, just like we always do. It always happens on opening day. So, again, opening day is opening day.
Well, you know, their scoring output with Watson at quarterback last year, I think I read where in his last five starts in the red zone, they scored touchdowns in 75% of their red zone trips. Well, what are some of the factors with a quarterback like him, his particular skill set, that, you know, make them and him so effective in play?
Yeah, well, they have a lot of great players. They run the ball well. They have a great receiver. They're a very athletic quarterback. They have several other receivers, running backs, tight ends, Ellington, Fuller, obviously those guys. I mean, you just go right down the line, Griffin, Miller, Irvin, Blue. So they have a lot of guys that score or can potentially score. It's not all one guy. It's not all one receiver. It's not all one play. It's a lot of different things. You got to stop and run. You got to stop an athletic quarterback. Got to stop good receivers. Got to stop good tight ends. So, we'll have to deal with all of it.
How unique is Deshaun Watson's skill set?
He's a very talented player.
What are some of the keys to keeping him in the pocket and not letting him scramble out of there after all the rain?
It's team defense. It's not one guy can stop him. So we're going to have to do a good job as a team. That's the way it always is when you play a good quarterback.
You know, does it make it more interesting when you're going up against a team you're so familiar with your schemes? I mean, obviously, Romeo coached here, Billy coached here, Brad coached here. Does that kind of make it more interesting because you know each other so well, there's not going to be anything unpredictable?
Yeah, I don't really see it that way at all, so I'd say no.
How
significant last year's game against Watson just in your preparation for the players to go back?
I mean, we've seen it, sure. We've seen all those games from last year.
Did you see improvement from Gino Grissom on the defensive side of the ball this offseason, this summer, this
year? Yeah, I think Gino's had a good spring, good summer. Got a little more opportunity to play. And yeah, I mean, I think all our players improved.
Some of the defensive improvements you made, was that key in helping make the initial roster this time around?
I mean, he's been on the roster for 4 years. So, yeah, as players gain more experience, they do things better. That's always a good thing.
Bill, you've gone up against a mobile quarterback in Cam Newton in the preseason and Russell Wilson in the Super Bowl a few years ago. How much time will you spend watching mobile quarterbacks, tape of mobile quarterbacks this week, just to get an idea of what it's like, you know, for the team to go up against?
Yeah, well, we just watch Houston. I mean, Watson's not in there, watch Webb. I mean, it's not just one guy. They have other guys that can do it, and so we can, you know, you watch another guy, watch two quarterbacks do it in their offense. That's probably as good a look as you're going to get.
Bill, I know that you're always looking to improve the team, but is the challenge any greater maybe early on in the season when rosters are, you know, changing around the league a lot more than maybe they are in the middle of the season when they're more stagnant?
Yeah, it's always like that this time of year. So, yeah, that's one of the things that happens in late August and early September, mid-September, is that those type of roster variations, movements with all teams throughout the league. So it's the time of year we're in. I'm sure that'll be something that we'll continue to stay on top of. I mean, we always stay on top of it. There's more of it now.
Bill, after all these years in the league, do you still get excited for week one?
Yeah, it's a big challenge. And, you know, we'll see what happens on Sunday. But, yeah, we're excited to get going.
When it comes to defending DeAndre Hopkins, is it his body control that kind of separates him from a lot of other receivers?
Yeah, body control, hands. He makes some spectacular catches. He's kind of always open because he can, if you just put the ball where he can get it, he can get it. And no matter where the defender is, there's some spot away from the defender that if you put the ball there, you know, he can come up with it. So he's good at everything. He's very good at going up and getting the ball down the field. He's good on intermediate routes. He's going to catch and run plays. He's good in the red area. He's good on third down. Guy's one of the top receivers in the league. Gets the ball thrown to him a lot. He comes up with a lot of plays. Even when it looks like he's covered, he still comes up with the ball. Draws a lot of interference penalties. So he's a tough guy to stop.
Bill, yesterday Coach O'Brien talked about the importance of defending the middle of the field. I know it's his first regular season with the Texans, but how difficult does a player like Matthew make it for offenses to use the middle of the field?
Well, he's a good player. He's a very instinctive player. He's around the ball a lot. So, yeah, it's certainly somebody we're going to have to deal with.
Bill, Texans are getting back their linebacker, Whitney Mercellus. He caused a problem against your team.
He's a very good player. He's a very explosive player. He plays for him in the kicking game defensively. Like all their defensive linemen, he lines up in a lot of different spots. Sometimes on the outside, sometimes he's on the inside. Wherever he is, he's a tough matchup. So he's a good player. Very good.
Bill, with the injury to Sony Michel, you haven't gotten to work at him very much, just seen very much. But what have you seen in terms of progress from him off the field and I guess now on it, now that he's back in practice?
Yeah, he's working out, getting better every day.
Yeah,
I mean everything. He missed some time, so he's a little bit behind, but he's working hard to catch up on and off the field in all areas.
Thank you. We'll get back to Matthew. Is there any similarities between his style and Patrick Chung's, or is that bad comparison?
Yeah, there probably is. I don't know. I think there's a lot of differences. There's probably some similarities.
Versatility, one of the strengths of the game, Matthew.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's played a lot of different spots in his career. We'll see how the Texans use him. I don't know. He might only do one thing for them, or he might do a lot of things for them. I don't know. Again, those are some of the things that won't come out until we get into a very good season. They start game planning and using personnel matchups more extensively than what we've seen in the preseason. So, I don't know.
Of course, you know.
Stephon Gilmore and Eric Rowe have, I guess, similar size, similar length. Are there advantages to having just similarly built players playing both primary
and
roles?
Yeah, so there could be. I mean, if players are somewhat interchangeable, then you don't necessarily have to have a certain matchup if you're trying to create a matchup. So, yeah, that's helpful. Or could be helpful, depending on what you're trying to do and who you're doing it against. All players are different, but when there are certain similarities that, again, give you an interchangeability between two players, then that lessens the need to, you know, one guy always doing one thing, the other guy always doing another thing type of thing. So, could be.
Bill, understanding that communication is always important up front with the offensive line against a defense that moves its defensive linemen around from different positions. Is taking that an emphasis this week, or is there any change there when dealing with a defense like that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a big mystery. It's just you're blocking different people. So some weeks, certain guys will block certain guys on, you know, 80, 90% of the plays. I don't think that's necessarily the case this week. I mean, they could be in a four-man front, but just have their players positioned differently. It's not like it's a big change of assignments, but you're blocking a different person, so the way you block them and what their playing style is and so forth could change, especially when you're talking about some of the guys that are as elite as the Texans' front is. So just have to identify who it is. Identifying them is probably the easy part. Blocking them is the hard part.
How would you say the skill sets of Watt, Merciless, and Clowney complement each other on that D-line?
I mean, they're all good. You know, Reader, Covington, you put them all in there. They're all good players. They're different. But they're all very good. Hard to block. They're athletic. They play with very good technique. They're well coached. Obviously, Romeo does, former defensive line coach. I mean, he's a great technique coach, very good fundamental coach, as good as any I've ever seen. So that's the way they play. And they're all good.
What does he bring you? Just a bit more uncomfortable going with seven O-linemen on the active roster and two in practice. What does he bring you coming back?
He's picked up things well. Yes, looks like he has some position versatility, has some experience. Feel like he's earned the spot. So, I mean, everybody that's here, we feel like's earned it. So that's why they're here. All right, thank you.
Hot takes.
I am Superman.
Oh, yeah.
Wrong song.
Oh. Zoe and Beetle, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Unique is Deshaun Watson's skill set.
He's a very talented player.
Oh, man. Let's get to this. Little piece of sound podcast with Ryan Russillo talking to Chris Mortensen. Yeah, I know, New England, you hate Chris Mortensen. I understand. I understand why.
You want to hear this, though.
You want to hear. But you know what, though? It's only in that same vein.
Or maybe you won't.
People are going to be like, nah, it's bull crap. Mortensen sucks. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And you know what? That's sort of hard to refute because he never really took it back during Deflategate. Unlike your former boss, Peter King, that took it back and apologized right away and said, that's on me.
Morton knows
later,
stuff, though.
And later said, I offered to resign. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
It earns you some sort of credit or, you know, lets you keep some credibility intact. Unlike, nah, it basically was right. So here it is. Chris Mortensen talking to Ryan Russillo about the future and the end for Bill Belichick. Here it is.
How do you think it ends with Belichick? How do you think it's, like, what do you think will be the end game there?
I think that Belichick, in his own mind, knows there's an end game, and whether it's at the end of this year or next year, I think it's coming. But that's simply an opinion, and maybe talking to some people who think they know, but you know they can't say they heard it from Belichick. It's hard for me to envision Belichick not coaching, but you know, there's a sense that this, and I don't think it's tied to Tom Brady. And it may be people say, well, yeah, he'll just go as long as Brady goes. I think it's just tied to him marching the beat of his own drummer, and he's ready to do something else. I don't think he will walk away from football. I could see Belichick becoming somebody's team president or vice president of football operations and help running a team.
Okay.
Interesting,
this year or next year.
Yeah.
And it's not tied to Tom Brady.
I know. Like, there's been speculation that the even 20, like the nice round number of 20 years would be where he would walk away, which is not this year, be after next year. So that makes some sense to me. I will say the one thing that Mort said that was interesting that I certainly think, to put it this way, there have been a lot of rumblings about this in like high-level league circles, the idea that whenever he walks away from here, he could wind up being a hot commodity, being what Bill Parcells was in Miami, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, you remember Parcells retired from Dallas,
right,
was out for a year, and then he came back as the executive vice president of football operations
brought
in
Jeff
Miami,
Ireland in, right?
Brought Jeff Ireland in, brought Tony Sperano in,
correct,
and like kind of built his infrastructure there. I feel pretty confident that there are some owners that are interested in kind of keeping their eye on that. The idea that Bill may be eventually looking at that kind of role in his 70s where, you know, he doesn't want to coach anymore. He doesn't want to go through the daily grind of that, but he's still really interested in the idea of team building and really interested in the idea of being in charge of a football operation. And it would sort of allow him to still be involved in football, but maybe not the same level he is right now.
Okay. But he just turned 66. He's not 70. And Mortensen saying this year or next.
Well, I can't imagine.
I think Mort's just trying to put a time table.
I think there'd be a year. Like, I don't think he'd go straight from one to the other unless it was here.
I just think that.
And I don't think it's going to happen here. Because
Mort
knows more
than what he's letting onto here.
Yeah.
Because he says, it's just an opinion, but I have. If you want to play it back, Tom, listen to the start of his answer where he says, you know, that's just an opinion, but, you know, it's also from talking to some people that don't want to admit that they actually know this from Belichick directly.
How do you think it ends with Belichick? How do you think it's, like, what do you think will be the end game there?
I think that Belichick, in his own mind, knows there's an end game, and whether it's at the end of this year or next year, I think it's coming. But that's simply an opinion, and maybe talking to some people who think they know, but you know, they can't say they heard it from Belichick.
Maybe. No, you either talked to people or you didn't. Maybe I talked to some people that
you guys know like how this works, though.
I mean, he's couching the hell out of this.
Like, there are times when you're protecting people.
Right, because it was sort of off the record. Someone told you something, and now you got to sort of, I want to hint at it, but I don't want to say that I know something.
I mean, I don't think he goes straight from, like, coaching to that sort of role somewhere else, like, right away. I think there would be, like we said, Parcells. There was the year in between, right? Like, where he was on the shelf for a year, then he went back in.
So to a different team.
I'd assume, unless it's here, unless he's, like, going to kick himself upstairs here, which I don't think will happen, like, then I think the idea would be whenever he retires from coaching, take a year off, reset, see where he's at, and then explore
where? Where's he going to go?
Well, I mean, look at the places. I mean, there are places where.
Would you term it as schmuck?
Here's what I think it would have to be.
An unexpectable place.
Well, just look at look at the organizations where Parcells was in play in 2008, and that'll give you a roadmap, because Parcells was in play in Miami because they'd just gone through that awful Cam Cameron year, right? Like where Joey Porter, I think, called him a P word in the middle of a team meeting, right? And then it was Atlanta was the other team that came after him. They were coming off of Vic. So I think it would have to be one of those situations where
like too. Somebody
things
crazy.
Are so sideways that a guy, an owner, is willing to blow the whole thing up and just say, Bill, I want you to come in here and I want you to reset our entire football operation. I think it would have to be something like that.
My first response was Redskins. Because I think like Daniel Snyder with crazy money, who just seems like can't get it right, whether it was buying all the players or Steve Spurrier.
And he could live in Annapolis.
Ooh. And hey, interesting. Formerly coached in
Bill
the
goes
NFC
home.
East, has respect for the team because they've won Super Bowls. He's competed against them, the Hogs, Riggo, Theismann, you name it. You know, it was when Lawrence Taylor broke Theismann.
It's stretching home.
There's respect there for
Baltimore's
for Washington.
Home, but it's close enough, right?
Home. Bill goes home.
Annapolis is close.
Yeah. Close.
Bill goes home. That's what it is. That's the sell. Can have for all the talk. Oh, he loves Nantucket. You can have a boat in Annapolis.
As a place in Florida,
all the blue crabs you want, baby.
There's plenty of ocean there.
As a place in Florida, too. So that'd be the other ones that you might look at. Like, what a Tampa or a Miami that maybe has seen their things go sideways.
Tampa wouldn't make sense to me. I could see even, like, Dolphins, too. Like, all right, we could do the whole Boca, Fort Lauderdale thing, get another house down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, me and Linda will move down.
But it is. It's a situation where the owner will say to him, here.
Yeah. Crazy ownership.
Push everything football
related. Make us relevant.
It's yours. It's yours. I'm not getting involved. You do what you do. I'm going to pay you a lot of money to do it.
Right.
You're in charge.
And who's this, and I think it would be a lot like Parcells in that, like, okay, I'm going to hire a general manager who knows what he's doing. You know, maybe it's somebody from here. Maybe it's like a Monty Austin Ford or something like someone like that from here. Maybe he hires a young coach. I mean, right now, the guy on the radar would be Brian Flores. He might be gone on and off the market by then, but it could be one of those where he's in charge of sort of setting up the culture, setting up the, like being the tone setter for the organization. And then he can kind of let those other guys do their jobs and still be involved in football somewhere.
Is he going to leave and take Josh McDaniels with him as his head coach?
Wow, that'd be a godfather move.
What a punch to the gut that would be for the Patriots. What? Wait, what? What? Oh, hey, but do you buy into this a year or two? We're looking at the end of this season.
McDaniels did or next?
I want to be clear here. I don't know what the timeline is. What I would say is I think that it's entirely reasonable to think that at 66 years old, he knows.
It's like the
thing. It's entirely.
He said he would want to be Marv Levy. You
here's
know what
I would like, say, though.
He and Brady are definitely towards
we
the
have
back
no
end.
Idea. None of us do. Is a year possible? Do you buy in? I don't know, but it doesn't sound unreasonable.
No, we wouldn't be shocked if it was a year or 3 or 4 years.
A guy who's 66 says, I got a year left. I'm not telling anybody. I don't want it to be a distraction, but I'm out of here in a year.
Nobody knows what he makes.
Who the hell knows?
He's got the trigger where he's the highest paid coach. He's got a ton of money. Like, at some point, he's going to want to.
Yeah.
Look,
if you're at that stage, and look, none of us are that age, but like, if you're at that stage of your life, I would assume that you start to plan for those sorts of things, right? Like, and you start to say, okay, like, This is how much I think I've got left. And, like, I think for a lot of these coaches, there's that element of, God, I still love it. I still want to do it, but I don't want to be in the – I don't want to be in, like, a dark room upstairs until, like, 11:30 p.m. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to do that part, but I still want to be involved because I still love it. I think that plays in.
But if you're running a football operation still, there's still a lot of hours in that.
Sure.
Maybe not as much as a head coach, but
sure, but
a lot of work.
But I would say this, like, scouts work their asses off. They don't live the same life coaches do from an hours perspective. They travel more.
Yep.
But if you're the head guy, you don't need to do that.